We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello. Welcome to this episode of Who's Counting, our podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how they're not always run the way they're supposed to be run, and what we as citizens can do about it. And we talk a lot about different issues that relate to elections and voting and the whole electoral process. Our guest today is probably the number one scholar and writer and attorney in the country who writes about all things having to do with the electoral system. And that is Hans von Spakovsky, who is the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And he writes constantly. Hans, I actually don't even know how you manage to research and write all the things you churn out, because you are always on the cutting edge. And thank you so much for being willing to take some of your time today to talk with us.
Sure, happy to do it.
I want to start today. You've written a lot in the last several months about some really important issues. And I want to talk today about ranked choice voting.
Right.
Because that is something that you and I have been following for a long time, but it's really rearing its ugly head in a lot of places. And so I think it's important for people to understand what it is so they're not sold a bill of goods. So let's start with the basics. What in the world is ranked choice voting?
Boy, I tell you, it's something that's very confusing, even not just to the average voter, but even to other folks who spend a lot of time on these issues. What ranked choice voting means is it's a system in which when you go into the voting booth, let's assume that you're voting for the mayor of your town or your city where you live. Instead of voting simply for the top candidate, the person who's your first choice, let's assume for just a second that there are five candidates in the race for the city mayor's office. You are supposed to vote for all five candidates by ranking them from your first choice, who's your second choice, your third, your fourth, your fifth. So you're supposed to rank all of the candidates. Now, after everyone has voted, let's assume for just a second that the top two candidates, neither one of them has gotten over the 50% in one vote mark. You know, perhaps one candidate got 49% of the vote. The next candidate got 45% of the vote. And the other three candidates, you know, split the rest between them. Well, what election officials then do is whichever of those five candidates was last, so the fifth choice of everybody, the ballots of everybody who said that that fifth place guy was actually their first choice, well, their first choice is thrown out, and whoever their second choice was becomes their first choice. And they then add the ballots back in and do another count to see if any one of the remaining four candidates has made it over the 50% plus one mark. If that's confusing to folks, well, yeah, it certainly is. And it can take multiple rounds of counting ballots to figure out who won. I think in the New York City mayor's race, which recently occurred, I think they had to do eight different rounds of counting, constantly discarding people's ballots and instead using their second, their third, their fourth choice to try to finally come up with a winner.
Who came up with this scheme?
You know, I don't know who came up with it, but I could tell you who's pushing it now, It's a number of foundations and advocacy groups, all basically on the progressive left side of the aisle, although I have to say that there are some Republicans and others who seem to think it's a good idea. You know, the George Soros, the Open Tides Foundation, Carnegie, all of these foundations that normally just give money to left-wing causes, they are the ones that are funding this. There's a really big problem besides the fact that this is very confusing, and that's called ballot exhaustion.
Yes, I read that. You've written about this. By the way, if anybody wants to read in depth about this, Hans has written a piece. Hans and Christian Adams have co-authored a piece that can be found at the Heritage Foundation website. And if you just go to the Heritage Foundation website, go to the issue page, click on election integrity, and just type in ranked choice voting. And there's a very well-written article that Hans and Christian have written on this topic, but go ahead and explain what ballot exhaustion is.
That's one of the biggest problems with ranked choice voting is ballot exhaustion, which leads to the disenfranchisement of large numbers of voters. What ballot exhaustion means is go back to my first example. There are five candidates running for mayor. Well, most voters, when they go into a polling booth, aren't going to rank all five candidates. You know, they're going to rank who their first choice is. They might rate who their second choice is, maybe even their third. But the average voter, frankly, which would probably include me, isn't going to rank all five candidates. What that means is if you keep having to do multiple rounds of vote counting, look, if you only ranked two candidates, and neither one of your candidates is in the top of the tabulation. Well, by the time you get to a third round where they're taking people's third choice, well, you didn't make a third choice. So what happens to your ballot? It gets thrown out.
So it's not included. You're really not even getting to vote.
No, that's exactly right. And again, going back to the recent New York mayor's race where for the first time, they used ranked choice voting in New York. There were 10 candidates in that race. They went through, if you can believe this, 8 rounds of tabulating votes. And by the time they got to the 8th round, so many voters had not ranked all of the candidates that by the time they got to the 8th round, they had thrown out over 141,000 ballots of voters who didn't rank all of the candidates. So 141,000 voters basically were disenfranchised and weren't included in the final count. And look, basically you're doing an instant runoff and you're expecting voters to somehow be able to predict who might be in a runoff election, which is just a bad idea. Having a runoff election where you take the top two candidates, whoever they are,
If nobody gets a majority.
Right, if nobody gets a majority. And 3 or 4 weeks later, you have another election. Look, that is a much better process. Why? Well, because then voters can concentrate on the two top candidates, re-educate themselves about them and what their stands are and issues and who they are. And the candidates get a second chance to do the same, to reach voters, to educate them on who they are, what they intend to do if they get into office. So voters are going to be better informed when they go back to the poll and vote again. And that's why the system that we've had for such a long time of having runoff elections is, frankly, a much better choice. I might mention, Kalita, that, yeah, this is being mostly pushed by the progressive left. But look, several years ago, I think it was 2016, Jerry Brown, former governor of California, you know, he's a pretty liberal guy. Even he said, this is a very confusing and terrible way to vote. And he vetoed a bill that had been passed by the democratically controlled state legislature in California to expand ranked choice voting in California, which right now is just being used in a couple of municipalities in the state.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting, I come from Oklahoma, and we have long had a system where if no candidate in the primary gets a majority of the votes, then the top two candidates go into a runoff to win the party nomination.
Right.
But what's interesting is that when I'm hearing you talk about this ranked choice voting and understanding that it's being pushed by the left, there was an effort a number of years ago, I want to say in the 70s and 80s, where the NAACP and other leftist groups were suing states. I know they sued the state of Arkansas and challenged their system of having a runoff election because they said requiring a majority has a racial disparate impact on minority candidates. And they went through the states and mowed down a lot of runoff requirements. So that, this seems to fly in the face of those arguments several years ago to get rid of state runoff elections.
No, I think it does. And like I said, particularly because, as the NAACP and others are always concentrating on disenfranchisement of voters. And ranked choice voting leads to large disenfranchisement of voters because of the fact that you often have to do multiple rounds. I mean, another good example of this is a Oakland mayor's race some years ago. Oakland is one of the municipalities in California that uses ranked choice voting, and it took them 10 rounds of counting before they finally got a mayor. And that mayor, the one who was finally declared the winner, well, he was declared the winner based on not being the first choice of a majority of voters, but being the second, third, fourth, fifth choice of voters. And they had to throw out a lot of ballots because voters didn't rank all of the candidates in the race. I mean, this is just, this is one of these new ideas. Social scientists apparently like it a lot, that's being pushed by academia as well. And it's just a bad idea.
Well, we have now the newest example is what's happened in Alaska with regard to the filling the at-large congressional seat of former Congressman Don Young, who died recently. And Sarah Palin is a candidate to be elected in November and was a candidate for the special election. And they have ranked choice voting that was put on the ballot in Alaska. What was that, 2 years ago, Hans?
Yeah, it was
passed 2 years ago, or maybe. And people were told, I don't even know what they were told, but I've talked to a number of people from Alaska who say people had no idea what they were voting on. They adopted ranked choice voting. And one of the two things I noticed, number one, is that I think if there had been a head-to-head Democrat versus Sarah Palin as the Republican nominee. Now what we have is the Democrat is declared the winner of the special election after 2 weeks. I mean, we talk about knowing the election results. The primary was mid-August, and it's the end of August, 2 weeks later, before they even know who the winner is. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, I don't think people even knew what they were voting on in Alaska. And I'd be curious if you have any comments about that whole situation.
Oh, no, I think that that race shows how confusing this is for voters. Look, I recently did a presentation to a group of politically active individuals to try to explain to them what ranked choice voting was. Now, these are people who are very active in the grassroots. They spent a lot of time on political and voting and election issues, and they had a difficult time trying to understand how ranked choice voting works, how all the recounts go on. And look, it's not because they're stupid, not at all. It's because ranked choice voting is, as former Governor Jerry Brown said, it's chaotic and confusing.
Yes.
And think about the average voter going into a polling booth, not knowing anything about this, and trying to figure out what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And even when people know that they are supposed to rank all the candidates, they don't do it. Because when there are multiple candidates in a race, look, I don't care whether you're a liberal or a conservative or somewhere in between. Do you really want to cast your vote, even if it's a fourth or fifth choice, for people who you wouldn't vote for in a million years? No.
Right.
Most people are just simply not going to do that. And that leads directly to what I keep talking about, which is ballot exhaustion and disenfranchisement, so that those ballots aren't going to be counted in the final rounds of tabulation.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how in the world you program any voting machines. I mean, I'm working with people all over the country in local electionary task forces and observers where they're going in and watching. And I'm telling you, under the current system, it's chaotic, particularly in the urban areas.
Right.
Detroit observed that. How do they program the voting machines?
Well, in fact, that is a very big practical issue, which is most of the voting equipment that's sold and is now being used in this country can't handle ranked choice voting. They can't be programmed to do this. So if Virginia, for example, wanted to switch to ranked choice voting, I don't know how they would do it, because they'd have to replace all the equipment across the state that they now use for voting and for scanning and counting ballots. And that would be a very expensive proposition.
Well, I literally don't know how they're supposed to do it. I mean, and if you're doing it all by paper, I can't imagine how that's supposed to work, how that you tabulate. It is utter chaos. But I'm just thinking in terms of the situation in Georgia in the primary of 2022. You had a couple of counties where a candidate had dropped out of the race, but after the deadline for the name not to appear on the ballot, and the voting machines literally could not handle that change. That is a problem with voting machines, and completely miscounted the ballots. And both in races, and there were two different counties where that happened. So I'm sitting here trying to think, if just that one thing can't be a, I just don't know how this is supposed to work. And I guess, Hans, the thing that I don't understand is, I don't think people realize the extent to which the left, the progressive left, has manipulated the election laws and places all over the country. But you take what's happened in the West left coast, in California, and certainly in Washington, and I don't know, maybe this is true in Oregon too, where you don't have party primaries anymore. You have what they call the jungle primary. So everybody runs in the same race in the primary and the top two vote getters. And, you know, it's really a way that there's been a very deliberate attack on the ability of the parties to conduct their primaries and for the parties to name their own standard bearers.
Right.
And then have those people go against each other in the general. And that's, I think, how most people think it works. But it doesn't work that way in a lot of places now.
No, and I think those kind of systems really are an attack on the associational rights of individuals to form and join political parties, you know, something that's protected by the 14th Amendment. And I think when states put in rules like that, they are intended to really gut the whole party apparatus. And while some people might not like that, that's a constitutional right. You know, you have the right to associate with individuals who share your beliefs, whether it's in a political party or whether it's membership in the Sierra Club or the NRA. And that is, those kind of jungle primaries, I think, are a direct attack on the associational rights of American citizens.
Well, it's interesting because the Supreme Court ruled in a California case that came up from the Ninth Circuit a number of years ago, what you just said. The Supreme Court, I think it was, I can't remember the style of the case, but there it was, where I don't remember which party filed the lawsuit, because the legislature had adopted some plan that would have eliminated the party's ability to nominate its candidates. And the Supreme Court sound in favor of what you just said, the party's right. associational rights and the right First Amendment rights of individuals to associate with the party. So I, frankly, have been trying to understand ever since California adopted this crazy new system, how that squares with that Supreme Court decision, but I've never researched it. I don't know. Do you know if anybody did anyone challenge the Constitution?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how the court would rule, but I think it is a direct attack on associational rights. And I would hope that if that did get challenged in the various states that are putting it in, the Supreme Court would finally come down and say, you can't do that. You can't interfere with the ability of political parties. Again, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, that the government, the legislature cannot interfere with their process for electing their nominees that they think will represent their interests.
Well, you know, one of the things that we're talking about these approaches, these new ideas, tell everybody what you're seeing in terms of what's happening with this ranked choice voting and what these different left-wing groups are trying to do to get it adopted.
Well, what's going on with this is very similar to the National Popular Vote movement, which, you know, we've also discussed, which is an effort to try to get rid of the Electoral College. There's huge money behind this effort, and so they are spending a lot of money to advertise and convince voters that this is a good idea. I think the way they describe it and the way they talk about it, they're not letting people know what the problems are with doing it, but there's a huge push to get this done in the states. And when they can't get the legislatures to do it, then they're pushing referenda like they did in Alaska, and they're trying to do that elsewhere. And again, I think the average voter going in, you know, they may have the impression that this is a good idea because of all the advertising they're seeing being paid for by huge amounts of money, trying to convince them it's a good idea, but they're not being told about the big defects of this and why it really is going to interfere with their ability to choose their representatives.
Well, I think it's on the ballot in Nevada in November or this fall's election. If I remember correctly, I think it's on the ballot there. They tried to get it on the ballot in Missouri and failed.
Right.
But I think the voters of Nevada are going to have an opportunity to vote on it. And I hope that they will study it, study your paper, the one that you and Christian wrote, and decide that it's not a good choice. Ranked choice voting is not a good choice for Nevada or elsewhere. Right. And then I also have been seeing reports that they're going into municipalities trying to get local units of government to adopt ranked choice voting at the local level, thinking, well, that way it'll bubble up and they'll be able to get it statewide across the country. But
right. No, they are doing that. And, you know, they're using a cost argument because they're saying to local municipalities who are always pressed for money, oh, look, you should do this because, you know, having a runoff election several weeks after the election, it costs a lot more than simply having ranked choice voting on election day. And I think municipalities are tempted by that. And, you know, my response to that is that we shouldn't allow the cost of having our democratic republic work the way we want it to work, which means runoff elections where voters have the time and ability to educate themselves further about the candidates. You shouldn't allow cost to override the better way of doing things.
Well, I think that's a really good point. You know, what I worry about is that they're going to cost us our entire constitutional framework with these gimmicky elections that and all the things that the left is trying to cram down our throats. So I really appreciate the fact that you have been on this and you're writing about it and talking about it, because I think we do have to do a little Paul Revere sound the alarm on this one. So thanks so much, Hans, for joining us at Who's Counting. And I know I have We're going to have you back on some other topics that I think are also really important. But certainly, this was one that I thought people should know about. And no one talks about it more eloquently and persuasively than you do. And you take something very complicated and make it understandable. And what I understand is this is a very bad idea. So thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks, Cleta.
So thank you all for joining us with this episode of Who's Counting. We hope that you have enjoyed this and learned from it. We hope that you will share this and subscribe to our podcast and make sure that you send it to others, because big tech is always on the lookout for anything that comes from Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. And often they censor what we publish. So we need your help in sounding the alarm. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again at another episode of Who's Counting. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.